I give you Most Weitzman.
Well, I too want to welcome everyone to Boston DrupalCon 2008. Thank you. We intend for this to be the best DrupalCon ever. Next slide. This huge event was put on by two organizations. One is the Boston 2008 Committee. There were a lot of conference calls, a lot of late nights, a lot of early mornings to make this happen, and so I really want to thank the organizing committee. I am up here representing the Drupal Association, which is the other group that puts on the event. We are not much more than the piggy bank for this event. It really is the organizing committee that put it on, and so thank you to all of them. They're wearing red shirts around. So if you have questions, please seek out the red shirts. There's two people in particular who need special mention here. Suze, that's okay. On the left-hand side, she's our event planner extraordinaire. Really did a wonderful job putting this together. She's back there. So thank you, Suze. And the other person, Kieran Lau, pictured over there. Kieran's a member of the Drupal Association. Kieran, I can't even tell you how much work he did to put this together. He was in charge of the session programming, getting the tracks together and the sessions, and he was in charge of fundraising for this event. And we raised quite a bit of money for the Drupal Association around this. You know, all of you attendees, most of you paid $200 to get here, and we're very thankful for that. That covered less than half of the cost of putting on the event. It was all of our sponsors who covered the rest, and Kieran went and found all of these wonderful, generous people. So thank you, Kieran, for doing that. This is where we've been, little badges for each of the prior DrupalCons. You'll see our new one, Boston 2008, in the lower right. Next. The other DrupalCons have been fantastic successes. I think we really took it to a new level with this one. You can see we have way more attendees, about double what we had in Barcelona. We have a much higher budget than we've ever done. This is the biggest event the Drupal Association has ever tried to put on. And we are doing pretty well from a budget perspective, which is great news. We decided to do tracks for sessions, which is an innovation, and lots of different events like the industry socials and the job fair and the Tuesday night party and the code sprint. And so I really think that the organizing committee took it to a new level, and hope you guys participate in all these extra events that we have for you. Our platinum sponsors, who really made a lot of this happen for us, I want to thank them. They're all logoed right here. You'll hear from the Knight Foundation in just a little bit. And the next one's the gold sponsors, pictured right here. Thanks to all of the gold and platinum sponsors and all the other sponsors for sponsoring us and our food and our attendance here. We really appreciate that. So could we have a big hand from the audience for the sponsors? Okay, so that's enough about the sponsors. Let's talk about who you are, who the attendees are. This slide is a repeat from Barcelona. The percentage has not changed in the last 6 months, so this is something we really need to improve in Drupal, okay? 93%. Let's talk about where everyone's from. This is quite a global conference. There's Europe, there's Asia, there's Australia, there's Africa. You can see where this is going. North America, South America, New Zealand, thank you. There's 34 countries last time I queried the database. Top two are by far most of you from North America. The rest are Europe, with the exception of India, curiously, comes in at number 6. And so thanks to everyone from India who has come this long way, and it seems like we have a growing Drupal community there. And just some of the happier logos from our logo contest, which kicked off the Boston 2008 website. Here, they're fun logos here. I want everyone to enjoy themselves at the conference, and let's go make Drupal a bigger, better place. Thanks. I'll hand off the stage here to Jeff Watcott from Acquia, and a member of our organizing committee.
Thanks, Bosch. Appreciate it. So you guys fired up or what? This is going to be awesome. All right. So I'm really excited to be here. I'll meet a lot of you over the course of the week. But I wanted to just hit a few housekeeping items. Obviously, as you may imagine, our goal was 500. We've had over 800 people come to the conference. So that created a few logistical snafus here and there. And but I hope you'll bear with us, and we'll all have a great time through this week. I want to call highlights to a few things real quickly. Meal tickets, you should have all received a meal ticket as part of your registration. That allows you to use, you're allowed to use that meal ticket at any of the food properties here in the center. So it's your choice where you want to go. But we would really like to support our friends at AIM, the AIM Content Management Conference that's going on down the way here. They're going to start up tomorrow. So I encourage you to go down to the booth. They're going to issue badges to everybody tomorrow. I encourage you to go down to the show floor. You'll get a badge to be able to go down there, and they'll have food on the show floor so you can go down and check out what's going on in that industry. AIM did a great job for us getting this space and allowing us to co-locate here. So I'd love for you to support them with your meal tickets. But it's your choice. If you didn't get a meal ticket, what do you do was the question. See us at the registration desk. We have those for you. And we'll be handing those out each day. Come and grab those. They do cost us money, so we're kind of trying to be careful and not just handing out thousands of them. Who here has a digital camera on their phone or on their person? Okay, we need at least 100 times that many photos posted on Flickr, tagged as DrupalCon Boston 2008, so that we can share each other's memories here. We want to show a slideshow during the last plenary session, so make sure you get your photos not only taken, but uploaded during the week. Love to have the best of those shown at the end of the week. We're doing some microblogging. Make sure you're on Twitter and on Pounce / DrupalCon. You can track what's going on. Yes? Jaiku, go for it. Is there a Jaiku? What's the Jaiku? Hash Drupal. Great. Let's do it. Let's go for Jaiku. No discrimination allowed in the Drupal sphere. All right. So with that, there's other things we could mention. If you have questions about logistics, see our great conference staff in the red shirts. We'll try to help you any way we can. I'd like to introduce Gary Kebble from the Knight Foundation, give a quick introduction. After Gary's five-minute introduction, as a platinum sponsor, we'll be hearing from the man you all came to see, Dries Beitert, the founder of the Drupal Project and CTO of Acquia. I look forward to hearing what he has to say. Thank you.
I'm going to try very, very hard not to stand between you and Dries, but real quickly, what I want to do is introduce some of my colleagues from Knight Foundation here, because we have something to say, and I'm hoping that you will corral them in the halls, because I'm hoping that you'll have questions. I want to talk more with them. So first is George Martinez, who's going to have to stand up. He's our CTO. And also Jose Zamora, who works in our journalism program. And Robbie Adams, who's our webmaster. And Al Santabaya, who is our programmer and analyst. It will become evident why you should see these people. My colleagues and I are here today because of what we've learned in the $25 million five-year Knight News Challenge that we all work on. That contest seeks the development of open source software for new digital products that can be applied to a specific geographic area. It also seeks to use news and information not just as an end in itself, but also as a means to build community. Knight Foundation is the largest philanthropic funder of journalism training and development in the United States, and expanding now worldwide. We also fund programs in 26 communities. Next week, our Board of Trustees is going to vote on our second year's News Challenge winners. It's very likely that several projects to further extend Drupal will be among the lucky few. Counting the winners that will be announced this year, we expect that our grants for projects that specifically use Drupal and extend its functionality will come to about $1 million. Now, $1 million ain't bad, but we've decided it's not enough. Today, I'm announcing an additional contest to specifically extend the Drupal platform. This is a point where someone announcing a contest usually says how much money they're going to give away. But I can't do that yet because I need your help. I want the community to tell us how much money we should give away. Tell us by submitting your ideas, discussing the ideas of others, and then recommending to Knight Foundation the ideas that you think are best, that you think we should fund. We want to make it easier for people to make a website and contribute to the public dialogue. We hope that that dialogue increases civic engagement. We hope it strengthens geographic communities by contributing to the flow of information in these communities. And we really hope that that information flow becomes the fuel of a strong democracy. We know that democracies can't function if citizens aren't informed. So we want to do our part to help the environmentalist in Idaho, or the city council member in Portland, or the grandmother in Indianapolis all have their say. That's where you come in. We want you to help us help them. Help Knight Foundation enable anyone to launch a website and start publishing their ideas. The trick is that this website kit has to be so easy that the grandma in Indianapolis, or Gary, can do it alone. We're challenging you to increase public discourse by helping make Drupal even easier to use. But again, this contest is not going to succeed without your help. You have to tell us what's a good project that will help Drupal become easier for the average person to use. We don't know the answer to that, and we hate to guess when we're giving money away. My colleagues and I will be at a panel this afternoon in which you can ask us questions about this contest, and we will also be at the Drupal newspaper group reception this evening. We've created a group at groups.drupal.org for you to submit your ideas, and more importantly, we want you to discuss those ideas so the best ones emerge. We want you to recommend to us which ones we should fund. We don't know what the best ideas are. We need your help. I don't speak Drupal, but I do speak funding language. And I will be glad to help fund the ideas that you tell me are best, the best ways to achieve the goal of making Drupal the most important tool in the citizens' toolkit. Many of my colleagues, not those here, of course, think I'm crazy. They think it is absolutely nuts to do a contest like this, with no rules, where the community is judging the ideas. You've got to help me prove them wrong and keep my job in the process because I like the job. It's fun. And I love giving cool people money to do cool things. Just ask last year's News Challenge winners, Benjamin Melanson and Lisa Williams, whom I will join on a panel this afternoon. By hanging around with them, my cool factor goes way up. So, here's a summary. Knight News Challenge yields many Drupal applications. They make us realize we should take a more holistic approach. We need the community's help. We'll trade money for good ideas vetted by the community. Thanks.
Alrighty. Can you hear me? Great. Also, when I started preparing for this presentation, I figured that I might not be able to talk for an hour about the state of Drupal because, you know, I only gave the last state of Drupal presentation in DrupalCon Barcelona, which was 6 or 7 months ago. So I figured, you know, maybe not all that much has changed over the past couple of months. And so I was a little bit worried, but as it turns out, I had a hard time deciding what not to talk about. So this presentation will be about Drupal, about the Drupal community, and what I think is important for the future. This presentation is specifically not about Acquia, the company I helped create. All right, so let's get started. Drupal 6. We only released Drupal 6 a month ago on February 13th. And the release has taken off quite a bit, as I'll explain you in the forthcoming slides. So we worked on Drupal 6 for more than 1 year. And if you look at these statistics, you see that compared to Drupal 5, Drupal 6 had many more contributors, almost twice as many, from 470-something to 740. And as well as in terms of patches, we had almost 9,425 patches in Drupal 6 compared to 4,927. So we almost doubled in size when measured in contributors or patches. And as a result of that work, Drupal 6 has many more features. For example, there's many examples, but we extended the permission schemes. So for example, forums are actually now a little bit more powerful where we can have forum moderators. We also added OpenID, which turned out to be a great move as many of the other systems started to embrace OpenID. And you know, it's really picking up in the industry. So. Great move. We also added things like actions and triggers and stuff like that. So a lot of extra features were added in Drupal 6. Drupal 6 is also easier to administer. For example, we added an installer, or we improved the installer to look much nicer and to be more friendly to use. We also added drag and drop functionality, which everybody seems to love, which is just great. We added better email notifications, we added sticky table headers, improved handling of signatures, so there's many, many usability improvements all over the map. It's also easier to team Drupal. We have info files for teams, we split out the teams in template files, which makes it really easy for designers to pick up Drupal teaming, and as a result of that, I fully expect to see a lot of teams next year. Because it's really become easy. Also, lots of API improvements on the teaming part, which has already led to the creation of several really, really cool modules, such as the Team Developer module, which is the black screenshot here. If you haven't tried the module yet, you should, because it really takes teaming to the next level. Drupal 6 is also more secure. We added update notifications, which I believe was one of the most popular feature requests. It will actually notify you when there is a new Drupal module update available or when this module update was about the security release. It can do email notifications or it can give you big flashing red warnings whenever you visit your page, things like that. We also removed the PHP input filter to a separate module, which allows you to physically remove that module from your file system, to make Drupal more secure. There is a password strength checker, which you can see also in the screenshots, which improves the quality of the passwords entered by users. So more secure. It's also easier to scale Drupal, so we put a lot of effort in making Drupal easier to use in the enterprise, I guess, or for big sites. So we added scalable logging, which allows you to aggregate all the log files into your, a central logging server, essentially. We added support for reverse proxies. We conditionally load PHP file to reduce the load on the PHP interpreter. We added block-level caching, which really helps to speed up Drupal for authenticated users, which was one of the major performance issues, I guess, in Drupal. And we also refactored some of the database stuff to allow for master-master replication, which should make it possible to use Drupal on bigger systems with many more database servers, essentially. So a lot of work has been done in the scalability area. Drupal 6 is also easier to develop for. Lots of API improvements under the hood, and these API improvements translate directly to better modules, of which you can see two screenshots here. So, also very important, Drupal 6 is for more people. We add a lot of effort and focus into making it easier to localize Drupal, to translate Drupal, both the user interface as the content which you enter into the system. And for me, this is a really important point because it allows us to reach out to many more people in remote areas of the world where English isn't, the main language. So I think that's going to help Drupal expand quite a bit. So to sum it up, it would have been enough if we added more features to Drupal, and it would have been enough if we made Drupal 6 easier to administer or easier to scale, and it would have been enough if Drupal was easier to develop for. But somehow we managed to combine everything in one great release, and I think that's quite an accomplishment for us and something which we should be really proud of. And that's due to the work of hundreds of developers that contributed to Drupal 6. It's thanks to the OSL, the open source labs. We will continue to work hard on our infrastructure, and we'll continue to provide free hosting for us. And it's also thanks to the thousands of people that provide support in the forums, that write documentation, that help evangelize Drupal and all these things. So maybe another applause for them. So the result of that work really translates to the fact that Drupal is well-received. Drupal 6 is really well-received. So, for example, if you look at the download statistics of Drupal 6 core, it's been downloaded 100,000 times the first month compared to only 50,000 times for Drupal 5 the first month. So, again, we doubled in growth and in downloads. And one of the interesting features we have in Drupal 6 is that we have the update notification system, and it pings home, if you enable it, to let you know which versions of which modules you have so we can tell you whether there is an important update or not. And we just looked at the database a few days ago, and it turns out there's already 20,000 Drupal 6 installations out there, which is quite amazing to me. So to sum it up, the Drupal 6 release is pretty damn awesome. So needless to say, the state of our union is strong, right? Lots of good stuff happening. The Drupal 6 release is really, really important because it's all the work we did in 2007. And it will really help us carry through 2008. So a lot of the work we did last year will have its effects this year. And similarly, all the work we do this year will really, be in effect next year. So it's important, that we keep working hard on Drupal 7 and beyond. So let's talk a little bit more about that. And so despite all these successes and, the great vibe and the growing stuff and everything, Drupal is still in its early stages. There's a lot of people out there that never heard about Drupal, that never used Drupal, and things like that. So there's actually a book about this, Crossing the Chasm, and they have a great example in the book. And the example is about the electric car, or electronic car. Maybe we should do a quick question. So there's clear advantages to electric cars, right? They're better for the environment. They're cheaper, they're good things. However, when are you going to buy one? And there's four possible answers. Never, not until hell freezes over, Maybe until you've seen enough of these cars and you know, you're fairly confident that you'll get service in the stations and stuff. Or maybe you'll only switch to an electric car when, you know, the majority of the people have switched and you figured if all these people are using one, I'll use one too. Or maybe you're the first guy on the block, you know, the cool kid in town, which is the first to use a car. But so what this really translates to is to different layers or different stages of adoption. Like you have the late adopters, which would be the first category, the early majority, the late majority, and the early adopter. And just like people are looking at the electric car and when to adopt it, a lot of people are looking at Drupal and they're trying to figure out, you know, is this the right time to start using Drupal or whatnot. So a lot of people are currently watching Drupal and they're trying to figure out if this is anything that they might be, you know, that they should be using. And we aren't quite there yet, so we have yet to make the transition to become mainstream and to really convince the majority of the people to start using Drupal. And it turns out that this is a very difficult transition. And also history has proven that it's often a do or die transition. Like for example, if the electric car doesn't make it, it's gonna have a hard time to reintroduce it later. So it's, you know, they really have to go mainstream right now with the electric cars or, you know, it might never happen. So in order to get there, it requires an unusual degree of unity and a really strong push from everybody involved to, you know, to sort of break through that barrier. And it's especially important because we have a lot of momentum right now, but if you lose that momentum, it's very hard to recreate the momentum. So this, what this means is that we absolutely must move forward really hard to make that happen. For example, if you look at some of the other CMSs compared to Drupal, so Drupal is in blue, in case you can't read it, and there is some other CMSs out there that are declining. Does anybody of you think that, you know, that they would be able to recreate their momentum and start growing again, or do you think they're on a path down for, you know, forever? And that's really the point. Just like the electric car and the other CMSs, it's important for us to maintain this momentum. Now, and to move forward and to make that transition to the next stage and, you know, have more people use Drupal, I think we need to do three things. Actually, we need to do many more things, but I would like to focus on just three things in this presentation. The first thing I would like to talk a little bit more about is to redesign our home, Drupal.org, which is I haven't even talked about it yet. I guess I can skip that part. But it's really the home, our home. It's where we work together, where we collaborate. And without our home, we can't move Drupal forward. The second part is the Drupal 7 killer release. I talked a little bit about that in Barcelona, and I would like to come back to that and for the people who weren't in Barcelona. And also some things changed and stuff like that. So I would like to talk more about that. And then third, I would like to talk about some strategic but sweeping changes, which I think are important to go beyond Drupal 7. So let's start talking about our home, about Drupal.org. So what, this is what's going to happen, right? So Drupal 6 has a huge amount of improvements. It will be downloaded more. It's already being downloaded more. So it will have a bigger install base, and there will be a growing ecosystem of people using Drupal. And what that translates to is that there will be many new users. You know, there will be a new group of users that come to Drupal, and not all of them will be in this room because, you know, we keep expanding, and they will be on the edges of the Drupal community probably. And if you look back to this, then you see that actually that's been happening for the last, years. The screenshots, for example, you see the evolution of the Drupal administration interface. In the early days, it really looked ugly, and it was only usable by developers. And over time, we made a number of transitions in terms of usability, features, and all these things. And the result is that we keep growing. New people come on board, and these people are not always developers like the early users used to be. So this transitioning is happening. And this is nothing new. This is commonly referred to as the bandwagon effect. So more people coming on board. Every major release comes with a new group of people, and this new group of people will be the model for the next group of people. So there is a certain trend, a certain path. And as you go from one wagon to the other, there is always some pain and reluctance involved as well. So it's not an easy transition to go from one group to another. However, while we did a great job, a really great job with Drupal 5 and Drupal 6 and taking the software to the next level, there's one thing which we did really poorly, unfortunately, and that it's adjusting our home to the next group of users. And on this slide, there is that's a Hermite trap, I think is the English word, and it lives in the shell of a dead, I don't know the word, but anyway, as it's growing up, it has to figure out, it has to find itself a new shell so it can move on and live its life. So similarly, I think we need to evolve Drupal.org. And the sad part is that the current Drupal group, the current group of users is still in pain with Drupal.org. So I did a survey a while ago and asked what major improvements people would like to see happen on Drupal.org, and this was the result. So quality and popularity ratings for modules, better documentation, faster page loads, better search. I mean, there is a whole list of things which a current group of users was really asking for, and we haven't been able to deliver on all of these aspects. And there is a next group of users coming on board already because we released Drupal 7, so we have a lot of work to do there. And as such, I would like to propose that we do a special project for 2008, which the Drupal Association will help with, which is a Drupal.org redesign. We're only in the early planning stages. There is a group where people can participate in this. But as soon as we figured out the details and we decided to move on with this, we'll need a lot of resources. We'll need money to fund this. We'll need project management resources, developer and design resources. Getting these resources might be hard. Just ask Kieran, for example. He raised money for this conference. It takes a lot of energy and time. So I hope that when we come around and ask for money, that you might remember this presentation. At the same time, I also hope that you're willing to accept some change. As I explained to you, moving from one group to another requires that we make some changes, and sometimes these changes are fundamental. So keep this in mind when we start working on this. Right, so that's a part about Drupal.org. Lots of details to be figured out, but let's talk a little bit more about Drupal 7, the next major Drupal release. So I did a survey many months ago, or 6 months ago, or 7 months ago, and collected more than 1,000 responses over 30 days. One of the questions I asked the people is, what are the most wanted end-user features for Drupal, Core in specific? And this is what people answered. So they want better media handling. They want custom content types or CCK fields in core. They want a WYSIWYG editor. They want better performance, specifically for authenticated users. They want better tools to structure or organize their content. They want basic views like functionality in core. They want this an automatic upgrade functionality. Improved event and data handling, and so on. So that's what people, end users, ask us to do. Similarly, I asked developers what features they wanted most in core. And again, this is what they answered with. So better performance for authenticated users, get the views modules query builder in core, improve the node access system, better internal and external APIs, so file API improvements, a semantic core team like Zen, a mail system with a mail queue and accounting, support for master-slave configurations, further extend API to support internationalization and enhanced code quality. So that's what developers want. I think, you know, we asked 1,000 people, so it should be very representative, I think. Also ask people what the focus should be of Drupal 7. And I asked them, should we focus on end users with small or medium-sized Drupal sites, or should we focus on the enterprise Drupal sites, or third, should we focus on the web application developers and you know, Drupal being a web application framework? And we have these long internal debates on the mailing list about whether Drupal is a product or whether it's a framework. But when we ask our users, this is sort of the answer. And 30% thinks Drupal is a web application framework or thinks that we should focus on Drupal as a web application framework. And more than, slightly less than 70% thinks we should focus on Drupal as a product, as a software product. So that's useful to know. So what does this all mean? If we put everything together, well, actually, it's quite easy. We take the most requested end user. Yeah. Let's see if I can go back. So we take the most requested end user features, the most requested developer features, and we know that 70% of the people want to focus on Drupal as a product, 30% of the people know that we want to focus on Drupal as a framework. So what that really means is we just have to take the top seven end user features, the top three developer features, and we should have a killer release, right? Which everybody would really, really like. So if we just do that, we get this slide, as you can see. I'm not going to read the items again. However, if you look at them closely, you'll see that there is some overlap. There is better performance is there twice, and also basic views like functionality is there twice. So what I did is I cleaned up the list a bit. I removed 8 and 9 and moved things up a little bit. So I took the next developer features in the list of features, and I added them to this slide. So better internal and external APIs were added to the list. And that, based on the survey result, should be the Drupal 7 killer release, which I think makes it a really easy target for us. However, as I explained last time in Barcelona, a survey is a survey, and you can't always trust the results, or you have to be careful how to interpret the results. And also, one of the questions I asked was, how many Drupal sites do you have? And everybody responded that they have at least one Drupal site. And most of the people have many more Drupal sites. So that's a problem, right? Because how many people gave up on Drupal? And these people, they didn't fill out the survey. So to make it a real killer release, we should add one more item to the list, and that's usability. And as it happened last week, we were in Minnesota to do usability testing in a professional usability lab where we invited a number of participants, and we watched them use Drupal. And these were technical people. They were people that were used to using content management systems or that are used to maintaining websites. And we basically saw these people fail for 3 days in a row, or rather see Drupal fail on them. And common tasks that take us 30 seconds to complete took them like 30 minutes to just find the right button, which is quite impressive. For example, creating a new content type, which all of us, you know, I believe think is easy to do. These people spent 30 minutes trying to figure out what a content type was and where to create it. So it was quite an eye-opener for us. And the results of this work will be published or might already be published online in this group. And here are some quotes that people gave us. So when they were working, that were behind a wall. And we were be able to see through the wall, like, you know, one of these glass walls. And they were also encouraged to speak up when they're discovering things. And so we have a long list of really great quotes. This is one of them. This is another of them. I already lost the page that I created, right? So if you create a page and you don't attach it to a menu or you don't link it with the menu, it's like, boom, the page is gone. And so we came out of this 3-day meeting with a list of maybe 150 usability issues that we can start fixing, which was really helpful. We'll also have some other stuff in there, like, for example, a heat map. And this shows where people looked the first 15 seconds. So we had eye tracking software, which followed the eyes and which allowed us to see which text people read and where they spent their time looking around. That's also very useful. And there's also an example here of what the eye tracking software looks like or what it does. So the blue dot is where the eye currently is. And the bigger the dot, the longer or the slower they read or the longer they pause there. And so this is just to give you an idea, right? Gets less funny after a while if you see if you see six people fail in a row on some of these common tasks, it's, you know, it's quite interesting. So is he done yet? No. So we have, I believe, 3 days worth of video like this. There is some rules around how we can share that data because we're not allowed to share personal information or about these persons. But there is a lot of material we came home with that we can use. So I think he's about to save. So. And that's something which we consider to be easy, you know. You know, there's more complicated things which people could do. So the message is simple. Let's continue to focus really, really hard on making Drupal easier to use until, you know, it's accomplished. You know, we can't give up, especially as we go forward. The experience is a product, not so much the features of the product. And there's a lot of stuff to learn from Apple, for example. All right, something else about Drupal 7. You all know this famous quote, I think. Perfection is achieved not when there's nothing left to add, but when there's nothing left to remove. So it's probably a good idea to remove a few things from core as well. And I would suggest, it's only a suggestion, don't kill me, to remove the throttle module and the pig module from Drupal 7. No. Only small modules, though. Something else people have been asking me about, will be the next branch maintainer. And we're looking for so the way Drupal works, in case you don't know, and I assume you do know, is for every major Drupal release, I'll select a branch maintainer to help me with the next major version of Drupal. So when looking for such a person, there's actually four main things I'm looking for, which is, does he or she have the right experience with Drupal? You know, you have to know a little bit about Drupal core before you can apply. Is he a responsible? Does he or she, he or she has enough time to work on Drupal 7 because it's a big job, as you saw earlier. There's a lot of patches to review, and oftentimes it takes multiple reviews. And then fourth, does he or she has a vision for Drupal 7? And it doesn't have to be my vision, but it's always nice to know when that person has a specific vision. So if you're interested, come to me and take these four things into account. So did I pick a branch maintainer yet? The answer, however, is no. And I should totally have taken a boot at the job fair to recruit for one. So if you're interested in the job, talk to me. We can talk. And for example, in Drupal 6, I didn't pick Gabor until 2 months after we started developing on Drupal 6. So in the first two months, I was working on Drupal 6. I was the primary committer. So I don't have to have one now, but talk to me if you're interested. So another interesting question people ask me all the time, when will the code trees be? And so I have an answer for that as well. At first, I would like to show you this graph, which is, again, from the survey I did. And I asked people, what's the preferred frequency of major Drupal releases? And the majority of the people thought that having one major Drupal release every year was sort of ideal. And then there's a couple of people that think two releases a year is better, or some people that think only one release or major release every 2 years would be better. So that's, again, data from the people that filled out the survey. Now, if you look at the Drupal 6 release cycle, the previous release cycle, we had a 5-month, more or less, development cycle, followed by a 7-month code freeze. And the code freeze was not always a strict code freeze. There were some usability things going on and stuff like that. But in general, the heavy lifting was done the first 5 months. So if we apply that knowledge to Drupal 7, that means the Drupal code freeze should be on May 15, 2008. And that's actually 4 months from now, because we're already working on Drupal 7 for 1 month. So that's kind of short, right? That's not a lot of time. So I'm willing to make an exception. However, there is some rules that come with this exception, which I believe are important for Drupal's future. And it pretty much looks like this. So if we embrace testing in Drupal 7 and beyond, in the best case scenario, if we have 100% test coverage, I'm willing to go for a 9-month development cycle, which means we get a lot of stuff done, and there will still be a 3-month code freeze, simply because we want to give the module developers enough time to upgrade their modules and to prepare for the Drupal 7 release. However, if we're not embracing testing as a community, I'll have to force the release date or the code freeze date to be May 15. So the code freeze date will be somewhere in between, depending on how good we are at doing at writing tests. So it's up to you. Other reasons to do testing, there's a lot of reasons to do testing. It's all been researched, documented, and stuff. One of the items on the list, on the wish list, was better internal and external APIs. And if you design for testability, that leads to better APIs. So we actually, by doing testing, we'll get better APIs. And it also encourages encourages experimentation and innovation. If you have tests, you're able to make changes, and you'll know what these changes break. For example, there's been some very recent work on some database layer improvements by Larry and all. And they've been using the existing test extensively to see how compatible the new database layer is with the old database layer. And if you go look up that issue in the issue queue, you can really see it work. So I encourage you all to read up on the test infrastructure that we have in place and how to write tests. Another good reason, when thinking about testing, I came up with a good reason to fund the next DrupalCon. So it takes a lot of money, right, to organize one. So how about this? Every time you break one of the tests, You just give, you know, you just donate a dollar, and we'll be able to have much bigger Drupal conferences. That's just a joke, of course. So testing, a little bit more about testing, the last slide, I believe, about testing. But we'll have to write unit tests, functional tests, integration tests, the whole thing. I also would like to ship tests with Drupal core, so people, if they make changes to core or extend core or whatever, they can actually test their changes very easily. However, I've spent quite a bit of time looking at the test framework currently and different test frameworks, and I want to spend a little bit more time evaluating whether simple test is the right tool. Because I would really love to ship Drupal core with a test framework, but simple test is just this huge amount of code. And so I want to do some more analysis and thinking about that and encourage you to participate in that discussion. And I'll give you one example, which is the Symfony project. It's a PHP framework, and they have their own test framework, which is called Lime, and it's a single file, lime.php, which contains a number of classes, and which is really small, which you could easily ship with core. However, it's not as full-featured as simple test, but at the same time, simple test, in my view, is missing some critical functionality as well. So there is some research to be done there. All right, so that's all I had to say about Drupal 7 for now. There is a lot of other things I might not have covered here. Don't be afraid if I didn't mention your key thing which you want to work on Drupal 7. Anything which is useful, we'll look at it. All right, if we think a little bit beyond Drupal 7 and even already in Drupal 7, there is another couple of things I would like to talk about on how we can prepare for more wagons in the bandwagon and how we can help help with going mainstream, essentially. Remember the story about the electric car, right? So in my view of the world, we're going to go from infinite extensibility to infinite interoperability. And if you look at Web 1.0 from a content management point of view, not from an end user's point of view, Web 1.0 was all about web content management. And Web 2.0, as you know, this was a result of a discussion we had with Jeff Watcott. You know, it was triggered by a blog post from him. If you look at Web 2.0, it's really Web 1.0 plus user management and infinite extensibility. And that's actually one of the things Drupal is really strong at. We have a user module. We have strong user management capabilities compared to some other systems, which allows you know, a Drupal site to manage thousands and thousands of users. And at the same time, Drupal is very modular and flexible, and there is thousands of modules out there which really you know, make Drupal very, very extensible. And as such, it's great for social networking stuff, blogs, collective intelligence style stuff, and mashups. However, if you look at Web 3.0, as much as I hate to use the term, but it just flows here, I think it's really Web 2.0 plus infinite interoperability. And whereas infinite extensibility was all about functionality, features, I think infinite interoperability will all about data. And for me, that translates to data portability, being able to reuse data from different sites and to move data from one site to another, as well as web service APIs. And this, in turn, really translates to, you know, what people have been describing as the semantic web. I know a lot of people will be thinking this, and I mean, it's true, we've been talking about the semantic web for a long, long time. However, I think we're at this inflection point in time where a lot of the pieces are coming together. and where we as a community, as a Drupal project, have a very unique opportunity to help, to help the semantic web get to the next level and really start doing some of it. And I even think we have the opportunity to be, being mentioned in the history books of the web, even if it's only a footnote. But I really think that's where the web is going, and I think we're at the right time, at the right place to help make that happen. So what does this mean for Drupal? Well, it means we still focus a lot on functionality, but we have to start focusing more on data. We want to integrate data from different sources, remote repositories. We want to allow other people to reuse our data. We also want to decentralize that data so that no single party owns that data. And we just want to do cool stuff with a lot of data, right? So having a lot of data is, it's just great fun. in my view. So what does this mean for Drupal? Well, we have to make it possible so that you can export your data, so you can also import it again. This means two things, really. So first of all, we need to extend Drupal so that it supports multiple output formats. Right now, everything we generate is pretty much HTML or XHTML, but being able to generate a single node, for example, as XHTML or XML or even JSON is really key in being able to export data. And once... once we can do that, essentially, you only have to figure out when to serve what output format, which is really easy. You just use the HTTP headers. So if somebody requests HTML, well, you give them HTML. If somebody requests XML, well, you give them an XML document. That's the easy part. How do we get there? There's been some talk about this in the groups, the data API group, and it essentially comes down to give more power to fields and less power to nodes or other high-level data structures. So decompose content or whatever into small pieces. Fields, essentially, single fields, and treat these fields as first-class citizens instead of nodes, and then connect these fields with some semantic sugar. And I'll talk more about that in a bit. And I think we should really work hard to put some of this stuff in Drupal 7, and I'll talk more detailed about this now. So this is, for example, how an event node in Drupal 6 could look like. So using the relational database model. So you have a number of columns, and then you have a number of rows. For example, a row could be Aqua is organizing a party, and Orbit will be performing at the party tomorrow, I believe. And that's how we are storing this data in the database. Did I skip a slide? All right, so here's another row. In addition to Orbit, DJJ will be spinning some music. And what I'm suggesting is, by giving more power to fields and semantic sugar, another way to store this data is to store it at a field level, where you store a specific organization is organizing an event, a band plays at an event, and so on. And if you look at this at the field level, you're actually dangerously close to RDF, where you have a subject, predicate, and an object. As it turns out, people have been thinking a long time about RDF and brainstorming about this, and you can actually prove that any knowledge in this world can be decomposed in RDF triples of subjects, predicates, and objects. And also, RDF happens to be exportable as XML or as part of an XHTML document. So a lot of things we're trying to solve have already been solved, at least at the design level, by other people in this world. And here's just a small example of what RDF could look like. And this is a FOF, friend of a friend, just generates some XML or some RDF that shows relationships between people. So Alice knows Bob, for example. And just to be clear, you don't have to export RDF as XML. There's also other formats. But this is a format which you could put in a feed, or you could embed in existing HTML code and stuff like that. And microformats and stuff like that are very similar. So there is actually already quite a bit of RDF out there. The other cool thing about RDF is that you can think about it as graphs, and everything is expressible as a graph, as you can see here. So Acquia organizes and so forth. It's really just nodes and arrows. But now the really cool part about RDF is that they figured out how to deal with remote data, just like we want to figure out how to deal with remote fields in Core. And for example, here we could connect our little event in the Drupal world to DBTune or MusicBrainz, which are large RDF databases with every music on the planet in them. And so we could link Orbit to their albums and to which tracks they have and how long each of these tracks last and so on. So it's really powerful that using RDF you can connect all these different pieces of data which live in different parts of the web. So here's something else, right? So when we query data using the relational database model, we write queries like this, just SQL or SQL. I guess you can all read this. And turns out that in the RDF world, they also have something similar, which is called Sparkle, which is a query engine. And a Sparkle query looks like this, for example. And the really cool thing about Sparkle is that it can do remote queries, so it can query data. Like in one query, you can access multiple data sources. You can query information from site A, from site B, from site C, and then combine the results in a single result set. And this is, for example, an example of a real Sparkle query. So what that really means is that RDF makes the internet one big database instead of having a lot of small databases in each local Drupal site or whatever. The web becomes a really, really big database. And Sparkle is sort of fuse on steroids because you can combine the results from different sources really easily. So I think that's really cool, and it's something we should be looking at. So let me show you a video of the future, actually implemented in Drupal by people like Arto and Ben and Miglius, who have been working on RDF in Drupal. And they got a lot of the pieces in place and together. And I think it just, it blows my mind. And I'll show you the video which we worked on the last couple of days. So first of all, here's Wikipedia, right? It's the old model. You have a page of information. And it's useful information. There is a lot of information on the page. However, you can export the same Wikipedia page as RDF. And here you see the objects and the predicates and the subjects in an HTML-friendly way. So it's the same data exported in a machine-readable format. Now, here is an example of Sparkle. You can enter a Sparkle query in this field, and then when you save it, it's actually saved as a node, and it will show you the results of the query as a view. And this Sparkle example pulls data from different data sources which exist today, like the Wikipedia database, as well as geo information captured by the W3 organization and stuff. And so we combine all these different sources in one query. Now we'll show you the result of that query on a page. That will happen really soon. So we're trying to construct a query of all the different countries and cities, and then as well as, you know, combine that, get their longitude and latitude. So this is the result. So the cities, the time zone, and the longitude and the latitude. So we just retrieved that information from Wikipedia and all these other sources without having to describe any database schemas or anything. Just a query, we figure out the rest. Now we're going to add some more data from different sources, and another input format could, you know, this is a list of input formats you could use. So we're gonna add an external feed, and for this we used an event site in Boston, and we're gonna pull in some recent events which are happening this week. Also, we're gonna extract a list of all the friends we have in Boston as JSON. So yet another format. We're loading these into Google Spreadsheet, and Google Spreadsheet is able to export its data as JSON. So now we write a query which combines all this information. So the Wikipedia information about locations and geolocation, the friends and the events. And we use Exhibit, which is a project from MIT, which is able to take the Sparkle output, the results of the Sparkle query, and sort of visualizes it. For example, you just saw two lines of code which were required to actually visualize this, and you see here the list of events and the list of friends, so coming from two different sources in a list, and if you click map, we're able to just, you know, without any programming at all, we're able to show these things on a map. So we have friends and events on a map. And we figured out their location. So we only had the, for example, the address and not the geo information about these events. So we combined all this information together real quickly, and you see there's events, there's friends, there's all this stuff. It's real easy once you have the different pieces of technology. And there is also in the sidebar, so this is another example. Where I think we pulled out different bits and pieces. We have we scraped the DrupalCon Boston website. We also took information from the Drupal modules page, and we're combining that information together, and we're adding a faceted search. So this actually allows you to see which people at DrupalCon Boston are from Belgium. It also allows you to see things like, now, here in this part of the demo, we're actually looking at a module author. So we combine information from Drupal.org with DrupalCon, and we're able to see things like what are all the modules maintained by Germans at this conference. And we're also being able to see where all the people are coming from, at, you know, the people at DrupalCon Boston. And we can look at the time zone information, which is available on the right-hand side, and we're able to drill down and, for example, these are the people with the biggest jet lag. There's four people, and they're from India. The cool part is there is all these existing data sources out there which we can start combining together and doing all these fancy queries against. And I'll talk a little bit more about this in a minute. So, you know, to me, this seems like the future. It's just not evenly distributed yet. So, you know, I think we should have a closer look at this stuff and at least make sure that the foundations of what is needed to make this possible are part of Drupal 7. And here is an example of all the RDF data which is currently available out there and which you can query using Sparkle. And for example, DBpedia has 1.6 million concepts described in its database. DPLP, which is slightly on the right-hand side, is an RDF database about all the academic articles published in the world, and has more than almost a million articles which you can query. GeoNames has 6.5 million cities and their geolocation information in a database, which you can, you know, just use. DBTune and MusicBrain have all the music in the world, all the track information. The CIA factbook, the entire CIA factbook is available in RDF. So lots of information there. So, you know, there's just a ton of stuff which is, you know, available. And so the real opportunity we have here is, you know, to start sprinkling this map with Drupal. Every single Drupal site could be an RDF repository which other people can start querying from, which we can, you know, mesh into this, you know, incredible database. So yeah, I had added too many of them, I guess. However, so this is the real cool thing. I mean, and this just blows me away. So essentially, Google and stuff are trying to build the social graph. They're trying to connect all the bits and pieces, all the people in the world into one graph, which is really cool. However, with RDF and this stuff, you know, we're trying to build a graph that connects everything, not just people, just everything in the world. And that's just incredibly powerful idea. And Tim Berners-Lee, the inventor of the World Wide Web and also sort of the leader in the semantic web, describes this as the giant global graph. And according to him, we're moving from the World Wide Web to the giant global graph. You know, the web as being one database which can be accessed by computers. And so this is a huge opportunity. It allows us to do better searching. As you saw in the demo, a faceted search becomes really easy. It becomes really easy to mash up existing data with other data in the RDF world. We can better target ads. There is, you know, deeper integration. Again, as I showed you in the video, better personalization. Import and export becomes really easy. So essentially, the import-export problem in Drupal goes away. In RDF, everything imports and exports without having to describe database schemas or anything like that. It just works. It's a problem which is already solved. It also gets us more of CCK views into core. And when thinking about Drupal.org and the Drupal.org redesign, we have different sites now. We have Drupal.org, we have groups, and you know, we might have a couple more in the future. And with things like Sparkle, we can do, for example, how nice would it be to have a centralized tracker page where you can see all the recent comments on your posts from Drupal.org as well as groups.drupal.org. With things like Tracker, you can actually make separate websites, keep them separate, and yet integrate all the data. So let's get some of this crack in Drupal 7. So in short, this is a short summary. Let's give more power to fields and really start thinking about how fields in core would be helpful. Let's make it possible to export data as XML documents or as JSON. Let's look at RDF as sort of a stake in the ground where we can get inspiration from and as a means to make it uniform and predictable and to tap into the existing databases. And let's see if we can use Sparkle to implement something like distributed views. You know, it all sounds a little bit complex at the same time, so I agree. We should try to keep it as simple as possible, but not simpler. And also, we should try and keep it as fast as possible. There's some engineering challenges we have to figure out to make this really work smoothly, but that's actually the fun part. And also, this really aligns well with my vision for Drupal, and which I explained at, you know, previous conferences, which is make Drupal really, really easy to use for many people. You know, eliminate the webmaster. The idea is, you know, when was the last time you had to manually write HTML code, you know, from the first line of the page to the last line of the page? And sort of, you know, like the old days, you write your HTML in Notepad, you upload the HTML file. I mean, that sort of webmaster role has long been gone. And similarly, we're currently working on eliminating the developer with CCK and views. You know, you don't have to write code anymore. You're basically assembling the different pieces by clicking around. We're also eliminating the designer. We have these color pickers and, you know, blocks and all these other things. And I think that's right now, that's one of the single biggest opportunities we have is, you know, how can we push the team system to the limit, and how, what modules can we write to do what Fuse and CCK did for developers, but, you know, have a module that does the same thing for designers, essentially. And then the cool thing about RDF is that it actually sort of eliminates a publisher. It's a little bit weird to say, but it really gives the power to the users instead of the publishers, because the user controls how he wants to see the data and how he wants to combine different pieces of data, whereas right now, this is the role of the publisher. A lot of publishers, they just republish information in a slightly different format to make it easier to consume for a specific category of users. And with RDF, that the user sort of, you know, starts grabbing some of that control himself. So I think it aligns well with that vision. So we start wrapping up this presentation. As I told you, the world is watching to see if anything can be made of Drupal. There is a lot of interest in Drupal, but we aren't quite there yet. We've yet to take Drupal mainstream. And to make that possible, I think we must move forward. We should, you know, keep up the momentum. To do so, we need to work on a better home, just like the hermit crab. We need to work on the Drupal 7 killer release, which has been nicely spelled out by users. And you know, let's work on that. And third, let's, you know, let's think about this thing. Let's think about the semantic web, and let's see what ideas we can pull from it and how we can prepare for the semantic web to happen and maybe even help drive much of this, because I really think that's the future. So as I explained to you, the future is here, just not evenly distributed yet. I actually think the future is here in this very room. I mean, you guys are the very heart of the Drupal community, the very core, and together we can make this work. So I thank you, and if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Any questions? There must be some questions, right? The guy with the yellow shirt?
What models for innovation have you found that inspired you? It's all really innovation. And it doesn't come out of blank.
So the question was, what models for innovation has inspired me? I actually don't think in terms of models for innovation. I don't know. Talking to people, reading stuff, that sort of thing. I don't think there is a secret formula for me, which maybe I didn't really understand the question. I don't know, but.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't have a clear answer, I'm afraid. So the question is, should you put the tests in core? Because a lot of people will just want to install Drupal. They'll never want to run the tests. I guess it's a valid question and something which we could look at, but at the same time, it doesn't really hurt to have them there. I guess some people perceive them as some craft, which shouldn't really be there. So something we could look at, but I would really like to ship a version of core with the tests in it. I think that's the key to make testing work, to make it really easy for people to start using these tests. Question? The tests, you mean? So the question was, what if the tests wouldn't be in core, but just linked to from the installer or somewhere else, which is, I don't know. I mean, in my view, these tests become a very important piece of our lives as developers, and you know, being able to guarantee that core continues to work and stuff. So having these tests available really easily to the core, to the actual code, is gonna, I think, is gonna be key to the success of testing. Every barrier we can remove to help people do testing, I think we should do. But I'm happy to talk more about that.
Question. So for RDF, do you see that as being something that happens at the border, so that all Drupal's interaction with the outside world is through RDF, or do you see that actually going all the way through the system and being, you know, modeling the internal data structures on RDF syntax and language and concept? You know, how deep do you see that sort of change going?
I'm not sure I understood the question. The sound system sort of bounces the sound off in the wrong direction.
How deep do you see RDF working better?
How deep do you think we should integrate it?
How deep do you see RDF going into the system? Is that a border interface, or is that something that'll go all the way down into the core data structures?
It's so how deep do you think the integration should be? I think that remains to be investigated. However, so for example, the fields-based approach where you have subjects, predicates, and objects, it doesn't necessarily mean that we have to store everything in one big table as fields. Like from at the underlying level, we could still have a relational database model, but there should be a way for data to be retrievable in RDF format. So I think we'll have to balance a number of things like performance, ease of use, and APIs, and all these things to figure out what the sort of sweet spot is to get this integrated. Lots of discussion to happen there, and actually I'm hopeful that the data API group will
help with that. Dries, we've got a question over here from Dimitri.
Just a very quick announcement. Thursday, 9 a.m., there will be a testing talk. Be there.
Okay. Thank you. Dimitri? So there is some tools available which compute test coverage based at the line level, for example. Again, I've yet to look at all these tools to figure out the exact answer to that question, but I think we should have unit tests to test the APIs. I think we should have functional tests to test larger pieces of code, and an integration test to test how different modules interact. And if you look at unit testing, you know, you could say that every function in Drupal might need a test. If you look at functional testing, it's harder to define when you get complete test coverage. And when you look at integration testing, it's even more difficult to define. So it might be a little hard to define what 100% test coverage is. We'll see how things go and how much test, you know, we'll have to develop a lot of these metrics and figure out, you know, when we have enough tests or when we feel when we have enough comfort or confidence in the quality of the code based on the tests. So, but so you're right. So As I explained, I want to spend a little bit more time researching the different testing frameworks to see which one is best for us, because it's a long-term strategic decision. If we pick the wrong testing framework now, we're going to spend writing a lot of tests, and you know, it would be painful to decide after the fact that, you know what, there's actually this smaller test framework which is sort of gaining momentum, and we didn't pick it up at the right time. So Part of this week, I would like to really see this discussion accelerate, and hopefully we come out of this week or the next week after the conference with some sort of decision about which framework to pick. So the sooner we can all have a look at the different testing frameworks and share our opinions and ideas around that, the better.
So for improving usability, what enhancements do you see necessary or appropriate to the installer and to the incorporation of usage of installation profiles?
So I don't have that many ideas left in terms of installer, because we worked a lot on the installer in Drupal 6. And so I'm sort of out of ideas there. And we didn't test the installer at the usability testing last week. However, what we did saw is at usability week is that a lot of people, or the people that we tested against, they really wanted to have example data. They want to have an example of how something should look like, and then they can work their way towards the example. So I would really love to have some install profiles which populate the database with examples. For example, a block profile which creates, configures Drupal to be a block and which actually creates some terms and taxonomies, and which will create one or two test blocks and which will properly configure the forums and, that sort of thing, because that can really help make a difference for people new to Drupal. So I would like to ship core with some simple install profiles.
I have a follow-up question on the usability, which I found really interesting, but at the same time, the people who were doing the tests were pseudo-geeks, and, we're all geeks, and we like to have cool toys, as you said, but to cross that threshold, there it seems like we need to go to some other mechanisms, and how do you see that? There's a disparity between crossing that threshold and where we are, and how do you see that happening?
There's a lot of things to say about that. First of all, there is a lot of things which would benefit both groups, both the experienced and the technical savvy people. Just like much of the improvements we made in Drupal 6, they benefit both groups, the experts and the newbies. So I think there is a lot more to do in that area. And then secondly, one of the things we could consider is to make two alternative paths, one with wizards and one with, optimized for shortcuts for experts, as people do in other software. So.
Probably want to finish up.
One more question or two more questions? Yep, in the back.
Core is obviously key, and your ideas and plans are very exciting, your vision. In the real world, for many of us, we can't use core properly until a number of contributed modules are also ready. Is there any part of your vision that sees a tighter integration between core? I don't mean bringing contrib modules into core, but a tighter integration in the process of completing the key contributed modules?
One of the reasons we had a 5-month development cycle and a 7-month code freeze was to actually, to a large extent, we were also waiting for contributed module maintainers to catch up and to make sure their modules were ready. That didn't always happen. So I think we need to rethink how we approach this. Maybe it will happen next time because they learned their lesson this time But from my point of view, we clearly communicated, ahead of time that we would freeze the codes at this date and that we would leave plenty of time for them to upgrade. But at the same time, we also made some changes to the APIs, some last-minute changes, which, maybe we should be more strict on API changes to help these people upgrade their modules. So I don't have definite answers there. But I agree that it might be something to think more about. And the other solution is to actually integrate some of these modules into core, which a lot of people have been supporting as you could see from the results of the survey. One more question?
We should wrap it up. We should wrap it up because we want to make sure we have time for people to go to lunch and then get back. First of all, just thanks to Dries.
Thank you.
If you have lunch tickets, the food court, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff, the food court's actually on the other side of the building, down a floor, kind of think about it as the other side of the exhibit hall that's in the center of this entire complex.
That's correct. Sessions begin back at 1:30.